Greetings once again from St. Michael's Broadcast, and we continue today with this message of inspiration and hope that has come to us in our day through the intercession of Our Lady of the Roses, Mary Help of Mothers. For 25 years, beginning in 1970, the Blessed Mother and her son would appear to their servant, Veronica, during the Rosary Vigils of Bayside. Over 300 messages were transmitted to the world through Veronica, acting as a voice box for heaven. This message from heaven is truly a great gift to mankind in these latter days, without which we wouldn't know which way to turn. If there is one thing that we learn from the message of Bayside, it is that Jesus and Mary will not be outdone in their generosity towards us. In their mercy, they are extending this message to the world, as it is the objective of heaven to reach into those dark areas of society and pull through some of these desperate souls who otherwise would be lost to heaven, because as we've said before in our programs, the world's peoples today are not being guided in the way of their salvation, which has left a void in their lives, a void that is being filled with the occult, astrology, Satanism, Pentecostal sorcery, all leading to eventual death, not only death of the soul, but even death of the body and suicide. So Jesus and his Holy Mother have come to supply for our needs and to give us that consolation of truth that is so desperately needed in these troubled times. This truly is an outreach of compassion that is extended to the world, the joy being that it puts you in direct contact with Jesus and Mary with no intermediaries in between. Jesus and Mary speak directly to you in this mission, and in some cases will even work personal favors for those in need. And we have one such example like this to share with you today. Our president, Michael Mangan, recently interviewed Bayside organizer Carol Medeiros of Massachusetts, and also her friend John Benavides, now a full-time worker for the Shrine. And they're going to relate how Our Lady came through at the worst possible moment and averted what could have been a very dangerous and pathetic situation. So we're going to hear from them now.
And it's my pleasure to have with me a Carol Medeiros and John Benavides. Good evening, Carol.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
And Carol is a longtime Baysider and bus organizer from Fall River, Massachusetts. And Carol, when were you first introduced to the messages at Bayside?
January of 1978.
Of course, I know that you've been the recipient of many graces, but unfortunately, as any true Bayside devotee knows, that as much as that you're the beneficiary of many graces, you were also given many trials and tribulations. And yes, it does. And of course, we're leading up to perhaps, probably your greatest trial to date, anyways. And you experienced what no mother would ever want to experience, in the suicide of your son. And let's discuss that a little bit. What year did it first happen?
July 3rd, 1994. And my child, he was now 23 at the time, and he grew up with me running buses and going to New York now and then and going to a Catholic school. It was very hard on all of us.
You said Scott was how old at the time?
Scott was 23 years old.
Was there any indications that Scott was depressed?
He was out of work. He was an alcoholic. He was sleeping a lot, moping around a lot. I had asked him just the week before to please come to Mass with us. I had also asked him about getting help, that I would take him into a treatment center. And he was in denial at the time and said, "Mom, leave me alone. I'm fine." He was a big boy and he didn't want Mommy to. But I knew in my guts that it was out of control. And he was like on a freight train and just couldn't stop it. It was just, it was tough. And the night before, he had gone to a party and was completely sloshed, I guess is the word. Probably more, my daughter, who talked to him until 3 a.m, said she had never seen him that drunk in his life. But he had a lot of pain. And he had lost his job, his girlfriend and he had broken up. I get, like they say, people have to hit bottom, but he lost his life that night.
And when did you first hear what happened, Carol, on that Sunday morning?
It was a Sunday morning. July 3rd, 1994. It was a beautiful Sunday morning, 4th of July weekend, as a matter of fact. And my husband awoke me, telling me something had happened. And I guess your worst nightmare, your worst fear, because you're so worried about your child. I started to scream. The children heard me scream. And Scott was in the rear of the house, in the back of the yard, and he was dead. He had died during the night. He had hung himself. And it was very hard to comprehend. And that was probably the most trying day of my whole life, because I just didn't understand. But I knew there had to be a reason.
Meanwhile, while you're dealing with this emotionally, physically, spiritually, your agony and torment is even prolonged even more because of legal or police procedure. He has to remain hanging. I mean, obviously, a husband first witnessed it. You set off here that it was his routine. Get up in the morning, turn on the coffee, open up the blinds, go outside the sliding doors, have a cigarette, and this is what greets him that Sunday morning.
Same things. He was beside himself. He said that he rubbed his eyes twice. He said, "I can't be seeing this. This can't be happening. It's a nightmare. You can't believe it. It's this can never happen to you, but it happened." And I just closed my eyes and prayed, solid prayer, talking to God, begging and pleading for a good couple hours.
And of course,
insisting. I can't. I was pretty insistent.
What was your intention or request? What was your petition?
I said to God, "Listen, when you were on earth, I know you rose Lazarus from the dead. I'm going to ask you the same. Do something."
So indeed, you're asking for a huge miracle. I mean, he's, for all intents and purposes, he's been declared dead, and you're asking that he rise from the dead, physically.
Yeah. Physically, everything. I was going to accept nothing but, because I didn't understand. So I really believed, and maybe that's what kept my sanity for the next few hours, but I believed that God was going to answer me and that everything was going to be okay.
Meanwhile, the shrine has been notified of your tragedy. We were informed by Teresa and Charlie Labby called our office, told one of the fellows who passed it on to myself and to John. And of course, we prayed for Carol and for Scott at the Holy Hour. And now what's interesting is how God works with these types of things, all the twists and turns and something like this. John enters into the picture here. Longtime worker for Our Lady and a member of St. Michael's World, member of the Lay Order of St. Michael since what year, John?
1991. May 1991.
Where do you enter in, John?
I was informed that morning of Scott's suicide, and knowing Carol, I felt very, very sad for her and her family. Went to the Holy Hour, prayed for Scott, prayed for Carol. When the Holy Hour finished, we returned to the house, and I was just relaxing, praying for Scott. And then Veronica calls. And
Veronica the Cross, our beloved seer.
Veronica called that afternoon after the Holy Hour, and I picked up the phone. She was asking for you, Michael. And so I went up to your room, and there was a note on your door. The door was closed. And the note said, "Went to the park to read a book, Michael." So I returned and told Veronica, "Michael's not here. He was at the park reading a book." And I took the opportunity at that point to tell Veronica of what had transpired with Carol and her family and Scott. Of course, when I told Veronica that you were not here, she was very, very, very surprised. She was almost as though she knew you were here, and you should be here, and you have to be here, but you're not here. So she couldn't understand it, but she accepted it. And
which is interesting, because Veronica rarely calls really called me on a Sunday afternoon. That was kind of her day off and ours from the work. We kind of, that's where we just took some time off. So it was very rare that Veronica would call. And looking back, it seems Jesus and Mary told her to call.
Absolutely.
So you told Veronica about the unfortunate tragedy.
Right. I then told Veronica who Carol was. She did not know Carol. Who Carol was. She did not know Carol's family. All she knew, because I told her, was Carol was a bus organizer for the Shrine and that Scott had committed suicide. When I said suicide, she exclaimed in a very sad and prolonged, oh no, very drawn, oh no. And then she kept saying, I understand, yes, I understand. And then she told me, tell Carol not to worry. And from then, as soon as she said that, I believed she was being definitely inspired. So happened to be a paper and a pen right nearby, and I started to write down everything that she was telling me.
Right, and this lasted how long?
5 to 10 minutes, about 10 minutes.
And then what happened?
Okay, so when she finished telling me these things, I asked her if I could tell Carol these things, and she said yes. And from then, we closed our conversation, and the phone call ended. But at that moment, Michael was upstairs in his room, but I didn't know.
So I hadn't gone fishing?
No, you had not gone to the park. I heard footsteps in his room. I said, who's upstairs in Michael's room? And it's Michael. I go upstairs and Michael ends up being in his room. And Veronica was right because she expected Michael, for some reason, she knew he was in the house. But then I told Michael, I said, Michael, I thought you were at the park. So I read the note again on the door. Went to the park to read a book, Michael. See you later. Signed, so-and-so. So I misinterpreted the letter. Then I gave you the paper on what Veronica said, and I insisted that you verify everything before we tell Carol. Mm-hmm.
Which I did. I called Veronica, and she did indeed confirm that these were locutions or messages from Jesus and Mary. And I can understand, as an aside, I can understand what John was going through, because having been at the other end many times myself, Veronica would just speak so naturally and so fluidly. And she takes for granted that you know that this is coming from heaven because she's so accustomed to it. And it's mind-boggling and awesome. Meanwhile, you're trying to write it down, and she's saying, yeah, that's what they said. What's the problem? Why can't you get it? I heard it. Why can't you? You know, it's amazing. I did confirm this with Veronica, and so I did. I called Carol as the director of the Shrine, and I called her. I called you, Carol, and gave you the message from Jesus and Mary. I believe John reminded me that we withheld a couple of key points, just showing discretion, that's all. And then John would call you the next day. But what do you remember me telling you?
Tell Carol not to worry, which right that second I knew came from Our Lady and Our Lord. I knew. Because only Our Lady lost a son. Our Lady knew my heart. Our Lord knew my prayers. My worry was for his soul, of seeing him and being with him someday, that God would triumph over this and tell Carol not to worry. That consoled me the most, that he was okay.
Specifically, we have the notes here from that providential day of July 3rd, 1994. And it says here, Jesus and Mary said, told to tell Carol, don't worry, not to worry. Our Lady explained that he was a disturbed boy and God has pity on disturbed children. Our Lady explained that he was driven to do this through circumstance. Jesus has taken him under his wing. He didn't find God close to him. He became desperate, not really thinking of what he was doing. And John asked at the time that, in other words, there wasn't sufficient reflection, in which Jesus and Mary said yes. And he's not held accountable. Jesus has taken him under his care. the Eternal Father excuses. Sometimes they act or do irrational things. He's with Jesus. And these were locutions from Jesus and Mary on July 3rd, 1994. This is what we mentioned to you that afternoon. Your heart's heavy, obviously, prior to the call. What's your thoughts?
I have been praying all day for a miracle, believing in one, but I'm worried about my son. I want to be with him someday, and I don't understand how this could happen, that God would have to triumph over this. I know the devil works very, very hard, but God will always do him one better if we don't abandon him and stick by him. Before sunset of that day, I found out my son was with God. I mean, never would I have expected such an unbelievable gift.
So quick.
Within hours, I had begged and pleaded. It humbles me till this day. It's mind-boggling, the love heaven has for us and how close they are.
I can understand why you might be humbled, though, in many ways, that Jesus and Mary would intervene so personally in your life.
It's still humbling that this was true, and a lady knew that she was probably going to lose. I was probably going to lose.
It's interesting, too.
She saved us both. Saved me, and she saved my son.
It's fascinating too to know we were all recounting when exactly did we call you, Carol, with the good news, and basically we all agreed that it was approximately 3:00, which is the hour of mercy.
Right, and I was so overwhelmed that God didn't even let night fall, just made sure before that day was out that He consoled us.
John's description of Veronica's reaction, that she was calling, asking for me, and saying, well, expecting me there, it indicates that Our Lady told Veronica to call here, and to call that there was work to be done. There was work for this mission to be done. Heaven knew the many lessons that would be imparted here, that many years later, this would be shared with the world. And it is awesome.
I have to testify to it because of I love Our Lady and Our Lord so much. But it is the truth, and it's to give others hope in this world, and mothers who have lost children to AIDS or drugs, whatever, that there's nothing Our Lady and Our Lord won't do. Nothing.
So you basically got the good word at 3:00, the hour of mercy. Your children were scattered at this point. When did they come back, and when did they hear the good news?
My daughter,
consoling news.
Yeah, my daughter especially, Mary Beth, who had taken it the hardest, suddenly walked in the door right after I got off the phone, and I said, "What are you doing here? You're supposed to be at a friend's house." And she said, "I had to come home. I've been praying to Our Lady all afternoon to please help me with this. And I just had, something told me I had to get home, and I had to get home." And I said, "Well, please sit down," because Veronica called the shrine, and there was a locution, and Our Lady and Our Lord spoke to her not to worry. Scott, Jesus has taken Scott under his wing. He didn't know what he was doing. He is not held accountable. Therefore, he will not go to hell. He is not held accountable. And everybody just burst into tears. We just needed to know he was saved.
What a tremendous consolation for her and for the other children, for your husband. And wow. And
I lost a, I didn't lose a son. He was given to me to borrow. He is helping God in heaven. And
so that powerful prayer was answered. He did rise from the dead.
Yes, he did. He literally rose from the dead, and he was with Jesus. That's all I wanted, was Jesus to get him. And Jesus did. He took him under his wing.
John, you mentioned that you spoke with Carol the next day. We had withheld a couple of points. What were they?
In discussing this with you before you made the phone call to Carol, we had felt that it would be best just to give her the positive points of the locutions, to let them sink in, because she was suffering enough already. But there were some messages given that were more personal to Scott. Jesus and Mary, at the time speaking through Veronica, Veronica informed me that Scott had a mental illness and an alcoholic problem. I had no knowledge of this myself. I knew Carol, but I wasn't knowledgeable of the children. Most certainly Veronica had no knowledge of Carol or her family, or Scott or his circumstances, and
not even Teresa.
No one. It was just as Carol will say, it was family.
So this is true, obviously.
It's true. Nobody knew, not even my best friend Teresa. This is something I prayed for and I worried about, but it was personal and nobody knew.
Only God would have known. Who revealed it through his prophet.
Only God could have known. Only they had to have been there to have said what they said.
In addition, he was coping with a childhood incident of lead poisoning.
As a child, he was always a little slower, and I guess the lead poisoning did have a remark, had done its toll to him, because once you get lead, that kind of lead in your body, it doesn't kind of go away. It will cause brain damage, which we found out later. But he was an altar boy, went to a Catholic school. He was a real good kid. There was a bunch of senior citizens in the neighborhood who called me and told me how bad they missed him, because he did everything for them, things that I didn't know that he had done. A retarded boy knocked at my door the week after Scott died and told me that Scott was his best friend. And I thought, if Scott had made this impression on a retarded child, then he did okay. Then he had to be in a good place.
Inspiring. Well, you know, St. Paul says charity covers a multitude of sins.
He had the charity of a saint, really.
Really amazing, amazing. And of course, one of the critical issues tormenting you is, we know what the church teaches objectively about suicide. And I think it would be well to clarify this for the audience. We're not suggesting anyone do anything crazy, but that objectively speaking, that taking one's life is morally unacceptable. But heaven's teaching us so many lessons here, that in this day and age, that there's a lot of conditions that the Eternal Father sees into the heart, and it's not always cut and dry. It's very rarely cut and dry. It certainly is in line with Our Lady has said at Bayside too, that many of the young would not be held accountable for their sins.
They didn't know any better, and you don't know you're committing a sin. How can God, who is a good loving Father, judge us?
It's a lost generation, as Our Lady has repeated over and over in the messages. They haven't been given a firm foundation of the faith, and they've been robbed. They have been robbed, the youth.
They're searching and finding it through covens and drugs and that inborn conscience that needs to settle on God.
But boy, God is, God's mercy is infinite, boundless. And Carol, I know this has taken tremendous courage for you to share this with publicly. And God bless you. Oh, I admire your courage and your faith.
I Our Lady and Our Lord have been so wonderful to me and my family. And what I know, Scott is happy, and it's as long as I live is to give testimony to this. And to Our Lady of the Roses, Mary, help of mothers, because I was a mom, and she never let me down for a second, not a second. And wow, I just never expected what you did. But
I know, you must be just, in so many ways, it's speechless.
And it's the most humbling. She is close to moms, she's close to everybody, but she knows a mother's heart, and she lost a son too. She watched him die on a cross, and I admired that courage, that she must have loved God an awful lot to take his, accept his will and watch your son die for the good of humanity. I love Our Lady and Our Lord. They've been my whole family all my life. And whatever I can do to help Our Lady for the rest of my life is hers.
It's a wonderful story because suicide, I mean, we'll have to get the stats, but I think in America, like among young people, I think it's like the second or third common killer. Yes.
Country under age 25, absolutely.
And so this is tremendous consolation for mothers and fathers that it's not automatic that you go downstairs. Carol, have you seen Scott in a dream, a picture, a flashback, a miraculous picture, anything?
Just in a dream.
What happened?
Just in a dream. I was laughing and talking with him, and I said, "You're okay." And he was great. He was laughing. He looked so happy. And I said, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you." And he put his hands on me, and he says, "Okay, let's go." And I says, "Why?" He says, "You're next." And I said, "What?" He started laughing. But he was a practical joker.
You are listening to St. Michael's Broadcast, and that was our president, Michael Mangan, speaking with Carol Medeiros concerning the tragic suicide of her son. And here again we see how Jesus and Mary look into the hearts and lives of people and how they will honor even a trace of innocence that might be present. Though I would say that it was more than a trace with Scott. But certainly, Carol plays a key role in this, being a Bayside organizer since 1978. Because if you go by the books, suicide is a very fatal sin, and certainly our Lord honors his own books. And had Scott been the son of someone else, who perhaps was more worldly or less committed in the mission from heaven, that grace for his deliverance may very well not have been present. So this carries a message for all those mothers of the world who are worried about their wayward children, that Our Lady will come through for them if they will simply commit themselves to her in this mission from heaven. In fact, this is why Our Lady has asked that she be invoked in these last days under the title of Our Lady of the Roses, Mary, Help of Mothers, because she wants to relate to all those mothers of the world who are sorrowing over their lost children. As Carol said, Our Lady was a mother too who knew the pain of loss. So all those mothers out there should understand that they have a friend up there who understands. And this is our message for today. For those of you out there that would be interested in receiving the message by mail, you can write to us. Send your letters to St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361, or you can call toll-free 1-800-345-MARY. We include with your packet a rose petal that has been blessed by Jesus on the sacred grounds that has attached with the power of cure and conversion. We also invite you to visit us at www.smwa.org. That mailing address again for all the information, St. Michael's World Apostolate, P.O. Box 514, Bayside, New York, 11361. And that just about wraps it up for today. Please join with us next week as we continue with this urgent message of Jesus and Mary to the world. Until then, may Our Lady bless you, and may she shower you with graces in abundance.